and welcome to the Dr. Nyman Show. Today is Saturday, October 29th, 2016. In Zika, there's been quite a lot of interesting information recently. We haven't done an update in a while, but we felt it was pertinent to update our listeners on what's been going on. So for this, we go to Dr. Henry Nyman. Dr. Nyman, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Ryan. It's good to be back, and I thought it would be useful to give an update, because as you said, we haven't done one in a little while in Florida, there's a paper it's a media report that came out earlier this week. It was in the Washington Post, and the summary of the article was that, well, maybe Zika doesn't cause microcephaly because there hasn't been an explosion of cases in South America or the Caribbean other than the outbreak in Brazil. And so I wanted to go over the data for Zika and microcephaly and clarify exactly what the situation is and reiterate the fact that Zika does indeed cause microcephaly. Media reports by reporters that don't seem to have a good understanding on what kind of reporting and testing is being done and why the numbers are what they are. But starting with Florida, there's been a steady increase in cases. The local cases, including six that are a little bit ambiguous and 19 that were actually non-Florida residents, the number is up to 207 local cases now. And as we mentioned last time, this has led to the CDC issue a travel warning. For all of Miami-Dade County, it's at two different levels. One is red, which are the zones that are mapped out. And in those zones, there is ongoing active transmission at a high frequency. And then for the rest of Miami-Dade, there is also local transmission. But the exact location isn't clear because the investigations, which Florida Department of Health refers to as active investigations, although based on the data they report, they're really not very active at all. But on the basis of investigations, they appear now to require five within a 1 square mile area to be reported as high-frequency transmission and to actually issue a map for those locations. And their testing is largely passive, and so it's difficult to get five in a 1 square mile area, even though there literally have been in the neighborhood of 100 cases that have been in Miami-Dade that are definitely local, but exactly where they are, that data has been withheld. The traditional method for reporting has been two or more cases in a 1 square mile area where the cases are from a single family. And the Florida has basically thrown that regulation or criteria out the window. And apparently are only reporting active transmission if it gets up to five. It has reached that higher threshold in four different locations, two of which have merged, so they actually call it three. But the first one was in Wynwood. The second one was in South Miami Beach. The third one was in Central Miami Beach. And the fourth one was in Little River. And all of these areas are actually relatively close to each other. Little River is a little bit north of Wynwood, and both of those are just across the bridge from Miami Beach. And so all four of the areas of high frequency transmission are relatively close to each other, and it's likely that all of the space between those areas, there is also active transmission, but can't be said with certainty because areas where there are two, three, or four cases have not been released, and the single cases, it's a little bit ambiguous as to where they might have been affected, whether they were at their residence or whether they were, at a place of employment or whether they just, had a venue where they went to Miami Beach and got affected, which has a very high level. There have now been 8 different mosquito pools that have tested positive for Zika. So it's clear that it's transmitting on Miami Beach, both south and central, probably northern also. And it's also clear that transmission really hasn't gone away, that the 8th positive was just a couple of weeks ago. So the mosquitoes there are still infected with Zika, and that's leading to local transmission. But one of the other features that was notable from the recent reports this week, one of the days there were 7 pregnant women that were reported. These are presumed to be travelers, non-residents of Florida, and they suggest that people may in fact be now coming into Florida because there's free Zika testing. And these are women that are pregnant and suspect that they have been infected with Zika, and they come to Florida to get confirmed. The concern, of course, is that these women that are infected with Zika and pregnant are going to give rise to children, babies with defects if they were infected in the first trimester, or the very beginning of the second trimester. That's really what leads to the microcephaly, which is one of the easiest defects to identify. And the article in the Washington Post suggested that the scientists were bewildered because there hasn't been an explosion of microcephaly cases in various regions outside of Brazil, and also noted that 75% of the cases in Brazil were in the northeast region. But these arguments, were made 6 months ago, and they've pretty much been discounted by the scientific community because of the appearances of microcephaly with Zika in areas that are not linked to Brazil. Women who have never traveled to Brazil were infected with Zika in other countries, and then giving rise to babies with microcephaly at a rather high rate. And I was going to go through the data for both the U.S. and Colombia. Colombia was kind of the poster child for examples of high frequency of Zika without microcephaly. And the problem with all of these earlier reports is that it's just calendar-based. That essentially microcephaly arises out of infection in the first trimester. And therefore, once Zika comes to a given area and pregnant women start to be infected, the first 6 months after those initial cases, there are going to be babies that are born whose mother was infected in the second or third trimester, and they don't have microcephaly. And so the governments are really not very shy about issuing reports saying that This woman was Zika positive, and she gave birth to a baby who appears to be healthy and is infected with Zika, and therefore in those cases, the Zika infections are not leading to microcephaly. The problem is that when the babies that are affected with the microcephaly start to be born, it's 6-7 months after the fact that the baby really generally will no longer have active virus. And the test that really proves that the microcephaly is due to Zika is an IgM test of the cerebral spinal fluid from the baby. Theoretically, that's very straightforward. It's straightforward because the IgM molecule is pentavalent instead of bivalent, like IgG, so it's 2.5 times as big because of the size. It doesn't cross the placenta. And because the virus is neurotropic, the best place to find the antibodies is in the cerebral spinal fluid. So if the baby is born and the cerebral spinal fluid is collected and then tested for Zika-specific IgM, is very strong evidence that the baby, in fact, was infected during his gestation, and that's what caused the microcephaly, if the baby is positive and for Zika antibodies and has microcephaly. And in fact, that was demonstrated initially was with babies in Brazil, and there was paper published back in the spring, which collected cerebral spinal fluid from 31 babies born with microcephaly, and 30 of them had IgM antibodies. So it's a very definitive study showing that indeed if the baby had microcephaly and had these severe forms that have been well described, and cerebral spinal fluid is collected and tested and is done with appropriate reagents to target IgM that are specific for Zika, is very straightforward. Now, the theoretical is much more compelling than the actual, and the problem with the actual is to actually do the test, you have to collect the cerebral spinal fluid, which is an invasive procedure, requires permission of the mother and accessibility of the baby, and the most conclusive tests are in collections that are made shortly after birth. So you have a newborn baby, and you have to get permission from the mother that you can do an invasive procedure that goes into the cerebral spinal space to draw fluid. It does have a small but a real risk that it could lead to an infection. You could potentially do damage to the tissues, nerve connections, et cetera, because it is drawn out by a needle and it requires a puncture. So there is a small but a real risk, and the benefit is basically limited to knowledge that indeed the baby is does have is going to have likely to have some problems because of the virus, or actually has microcephaly because of the virus. So you get a definitive diagnosis, but it's not that there's a Zika-specific type of treatment that would benefit the child. It would just identify the child as having been infected, and maybe some are predictive for the types of problems that are going to develop in the future. But it's not like if the they'd be Zika positive, there's a specific treatment that will prevent these future problems or reverse the effects of the virus. And so as a result, many of the microcephaly cases that are caused by Zika are not confirmed because there's no sample that's taken. And in the United States, there's one study that's ongoing that really is monitoring women that are Zika positive, that are both pregnant and Zika positive. And there's a registry, and the registry now is, I think it's up to 939 cases of residents of the U.S. that have tested positive for Zika, and those women are being monitored. And from that group, there are 28 cases that have already been identified, including 23 live births. The other five ended up not going to term either because there was a miscarriage or the pregnancy was terminated. But the 28 cases represents just a small percentage of the women in the registry because, number one, these defects arise from the first trimester, so that means that two-thirds of the women that are in the registry are not going to have babies with microcephaly simply because they weren't infected in the first trimester. And so if you take the little over the 900 and you remove the two-thirds that were not infected in the first trimester, you've only got about 300 that are at risk to develop microcephaly. And the vast majority of those 300 have not given birth yet. So there may be a relatively small number, like maybe 50, maybe 100. So between 50 and 100 women basically have tested positive for Zika and have given birth to a baby. And out of that relatively small number of women and term babies, there 28 of them have either had microcephaly or some other birth defect or were terminated either through miscarriage or an elective abortion. So it shows that in the U.S. that is a very high frequency of the babies that are at risk. And it should be noted that the vast majority of the women in the United States are not linked to Brazil, that most of the pregnancies in the U.S. really are from women that were infected in the Caribbean, just as most of the travelers in the U.S. are from citizens who have been infected in the Caribbean. And so the high frequency of microcephaly cases in the U.S. Would indicate that it's from Zika and it really has nothing to do with cofactors in Brazil. And similarly, the data out of Colombia really showed the same thing, and it was anticipated that this would happen in Colombia. And that it would really begin in the spring because the first cases in Colombia were in the fall of 2015. And Colombia Ministry of Health does issue a weekly update, and it does include microcephaly cases. And on the 14th week of 2016, they reported the first confirmed cases of microcephaly that were Zika positive. And at that time, on week 14, they had reported 33 cases of microcephaly in the country. And the 33 is actually slightly below the expected number because they had indicated that they typically get approximately 3 cases of microcephaly per week in the country for reasons other than Zika infection. That's kind of what the background level is based on the surveillance that they do at various clinics and hospitals. And right after they announced those initial positives, then the weekly number of microcephalus cases started to increase. And really, every week between the 15th week and the 21st week, so for 6 weeks in a row, the minimum number of cases they reported was 6, and the maximum was 11. So that was 2 to 4 times what the background level was. And then on week 22, that number jumped up to 23. And ever since week 22, the number of cases reported has been in the double digits every week. And it got as high as 62 cases in week 27. It was 55 cases in week 38. Most of the cases are, most of the weeks report at least 20-something. And all of them are double digits. The lowest week was 12, week 36. And the most recent week was week 41, which is week 16. So if you just look at the number of microcephaly cases every week, you can see that the numbers, you know, are well above what the traditional background level is. And they literally have been in the double digits for 20 weeks in a row. And so that's an indication that these are Zika linked. They do the testing, but most of the cases that they report have not yet been tested. The totals through this, through week 41, which is the most recent report, was that the total number of cases was 602, which is much higher than the number that had been Zika confirmed, which is 47. But out of those 602 microcephaly cases, 342 have not been tested. So the majority of the microcephaly cases have not been tested for Zika. And then of the ones that were tested, 47 were positive and 213 were negative. But even the 213 likely includes Zika cases, because that 213 is significantly above the 3 cases a week, is about twice as high as the expected background level. And that probably just indicates limitations in the testing for Zika. It's unclear whether these are radiological tests or whether these are a PCR or neutralizing for cerebral spinal fluid. But it's clear that the number of cases that are discarded are too high to represent the background. The number of background cases at week 41 should be about 120, and they're at 213, so they're almost 100 cases above what the expected background level is. And those would be reflective of cases that are just being missed by their assay. So in this Washington Post article, they did include Colombia, and they were about a week behind. So they were through week 30. I'm sorry, week 40. And week 40, there were 46 confirmed cases, and that's what they had listed in the article. They said, you know, there were only 46 microcephaly cases, when in fact, as of week 40, there were 586 that had been reported. And then the reason the 46 was so much lower than the number of actual cases was because most of those 586, 332 to be exact, had not been tested. And so this is a typical problem that comes in reporting of the of the Zika microcephaly cases. The data is reported in the form of how many positives there were out of how many cases there were. And the reader, and apparently in this case the writers of this article, are left with the false impression that all of the ones that are not positive have actually tested negative, when in fact the majority of the cases that are not positive have never been tested for Zika. So it's a classic underreporting. It's really a function of how the testing is done, and the fact is that most cases really are not tested. Even in Brazil, when the first reports came out, I think there were about 1,500 microcephaly cases. And the first media reports that came out said, well, there might have been 1,500 microcephaly cases, but only 7 were Zika confirmed. And that's because there was just a very tiny percentage of the sample had actually been tested. I think the number positive by direct testing is now closer to 300 in Brazil, but the number of confirmed cases radiologically are about 10 times that. So in Brazil, even though they know it's a problem and even though they're trying to get a handle on how common it is, most of the cases are just confirmed by radiological examination of the baby's brain to see what the circumference of the head is, and B, to look for various characteristic changes that are associated with Zika infections, including calcium deposits, which are salts that are show up as circles in the brain because the brain tissue has been destroyed by the virus there, and the open space, which no longer has the brain tissue, has been populated by calcium salts, which show up on the MRI. There's characteristic holes in the brain, and there's also characteristic changes in various structures in the brain that indicate that there has been an infection. And there are a few other viruses that can cause similar types of changes, and there are tests for those. And these babies have been tested for these other agents, and they're negative for the other agents. And so most of the positives in Brazil are done based on radiological evidence. But the bottom line is that the Zika does cause microcephaly. The microcephaly cases are grossly underreported, in part because most of the cases are never tested for Zika. And those that are tested, they either have to have collected a cerebral spinal fluid, which is the best evidence, or they have to have an experienced radiologist or a team of radiologists looking at the MRIs to determine whether these characteristic structures are present and are indicative of a Zika infection. So really what I want to cover is to kind of reiterate the fact that in the scientific community there really is no doubt that Zika is causing microcephaly. The media reports, such as the one in the Washington Post, raise questions for all the wrong reasons. They don't seem to understand that, when Columbia reports 46 positives, that doesn't mean there's 46 cases of microcephaly. It means there's 46 that they happened to collect the cerebral spinal fluid and prove that it was Zika due to the IgM in the cerebral spinal fluid. But in fact, in the case of Columbia, there are really 602 and those 602 are approximately 500 more than would have been expected by the three cases per week. And the same thing is seen in the U.S., that the U.S. has a much smaller population of women that were infected by Zika, most of which were infected outside of the U.S. And were tested positive once they returned or arrived here. And that from that relatively small population, there have been 28 cases that have been documented. And these cases in the U.S. That have not given birth are going to produce a significant increase in the number of cases in the United States, as well as the number of cases in Florida and the Florida pregnant cases is well over 100 now that are in Zika confirmed. And these will give rise to the children with microcephaly, especially if the mother is affected in the first trimester. And these babies will have medical costs ranging between $1 and $10 million in their lifetime. And so the Zika does create a significant problem with regard to microcephaly. They are likely to cause additional problems that may not appear for months or years after the baby is born. And those other problems may be associated with infections in the second or third trimester. And so due to the potential delay, most of those, the frequency of those types of problems is clearly not well understood because even in Brazil, it's only been a year and a half or so since the first cases, and those would be the first infections, not the first births. The microcephaly births really started about a year ago. And so that's the quick roundup. It's unfortunate the Washington Post put out that paper because there's a lot of other websites now that conspiracy like sites that have maintained that. And so it's been a hoax perpetrated by the CDC and pharmaceutical companies that just wanted to create a vaccine to convince the population that they need a vaccine. So it's just for them to sell a product that really has no real use, and it's just to increase profits when nothing can be further from the truth. And Zika definitely causes microcephaly. And the Washington Post should actually retract that article and issue an explanation as to why the numbers that were presented indicating there the number of microcephaly cases reported was low was not because Zika doesn't cause microcephaly, but really because these countries doing the reporting have very limited testing and are rather reluctant to admit how many microcephaly cases they actually have. So that wraps things up for this report.
Okay, well, thank you for the information. Listeners can always visit our website, evercomonomics.co, for all the latest information. And thank you, everyone, and have a good day.